Jackie Lamport. Today is Wednesday, October 20th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
There were sort of treasure hunters here for decades. And, you know, they'd find beautiful opium bottles, wonderful bowls and pipes, and there'd be gorgeous things.
We take a trip down to Todd Inlet in central Saanich and hear from local author Gwen Curry about the many people who have called the small fjord home. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by the Avenue Gallery in beautiful Oak Bay Village. Drop in to view Brent Lynch's solo exhibition, Passages, on until November 1st. A powerful landscape and figurative painter, Brent Lynch focuses on mood, light, composition, and movement to convey his experience. The Avenue Gallery looks forward to welcoming you to take in the magnificence of Brent Lynch's new collection, or view the exhibition online at theavenuegallery.com. Today, co-producer Emily Vance takes the lead on this story.
Exploring the trails around Todd Inlet in central Saanich, one thing that becomes immediately clear is the impact that humans have had on the landscape. There are many layers of history in the park, and it shows. The inlet was protected as part of Gowland-Todd Provincial Park in 1995. Before that, in the early 1900s, the area underwent massive ecological degradation as an industrial site. It was home to the Vancouver-Portland Cement Company. These days, a sign at the entrance welcomes visitors to traditional Wasanich territory. It was and still is a culturally significant area for the Wasanich people. It was also an important place of food harvest in the pre-colonial era. The Senchothan name for the area is Sneakwith, which means home of the blue grouse. Walking through, you can see cedar trees that have been stripped of large pieces of bark. Those culturally modified trees dot the pathway and serve as a reminder of the presence of Wasanich nations in the inlet since time immemorial. A little bit further down the trail, the first cement foundations reveal themselves. They're the remains of what used to be an apparatus for mixing clay. Like much of the crumbling cement left over in the area, they're now covered in moss. It's one clue of many towards the inlet's industrial history. The Vancouver-Portland Cement Company brought workers of European, Chinese, and Indian descent to live on the inlet's shores. Step off the trail, and you're likely to find old homesteading artifacts mingling with nurse logs and mushrooms. Much of these objects have been retrieved by historians and treasure seekers, but some still remain, and much of the trail is embedded with old brick. Remnants of structures are everywhere, though they are weathered and worn by time and rain. It was precisely this mixture of natural, industrial, and historical that made me curious to find out more. To do exactly that, I met up with local author Gwen Curry at the trailhead off Wallace Drive.
Hi there. Hi, are you Gwen?
I am.
Hello, I'm Emily.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Airshake.
A former professor of visual arts at the University of Victoria and an artist and a writer, Gwen published the book Todd Inlet, A Healing Place in 2015. Through long walks with her camera, Gwen came to know this place, and the idea for a book came naturally. About 10 minutes into our walk down the trail, the path veers off to the left, where the first visible cement foundation of an old house sits. Further along the path, a tree bears the last of the season's apples. These remnants are more clues, this time to the lives of the first settlers to come here.
There were 13 families that were, shall we say, colonial types, you know, that lived here. And this is part of the foundation, and you'll see quite a major foundation we'll come to at the bottom here, and that was the manager's house, which was Carriers. And this was their gardens, and so you'll see, you know, you'll still see daffodils and different things coming up. These apple trees, some of them are from the 1800s. They're either from these families planting them, but there was an orchard here in the 1800s for sure, and there was a fellow that mined the limestone all by himself before the company took it over.
The families that lived there came to work at the cement company. The company itself was established by Robert Bouchard in 1904, whose wife, Jenny, would go on to found Bouchard Gardens.
Mr. Bouchard was managing or running this entire show, and there were five, I think, massive, like 100-foot chimneys piping out black smoke from the coal. As we go further down, there were like three-story concrete buildings, massive, you know, warehouse, and kilns to make the cement, the wharf, steamships coming in and out of here, like two at a time, amazing. And it was a huge production because this began in 1904. So they needed Chinese labor. They came over, and they say it was anywhere from 80 people to maybe 300. They just had to fend for themselves. I mean, they were taken care of in some ways. They were given some shelter, but I think they had to build their own places, feed themselves, everything. They were separate. So over there was the Chinese community, and these were the 13 families of the, you know, so-called white people.
Down a bit closer to the water's edge was the manager's house, which belonged to the Carrier family. All that remains now is the cement foundation and a few stray items, also made of cement.
These are the wash tubs in the basement where they did their laundry. So this was a two or three-story house, quite a good size. Right behind the house is a tennis court.
What's left of the foundation is covered in graffiti, though it's not just scrawling tags. The three large pieces that were there when I went are beautiful, and they're carefully done. The artist, or artists, are clearly aware of the history of the area. On the bottom left-hand corner of one piece, the words Portland Cement are written in black spray paint. The spray paint is juxtaposed with an old red cedar growing just behind the foundation, which Gwen says must have been planted when the house was first built. It's massive now. The trunk is at least 5 feet wide.
The families stayed here, a lot of them, and other families moved in, even after the cement plant shut down. And Bamberton became the new cement plant, and Bouchard himself became the manager of that one. Shut this one down, went over there. So all of those years, like the 30s, 40s, 50s, the 60s, these houses were still here, and they were still lived in by families. It became sparser and sparser, and finally around 68 or so, they burned all the houses down because everybody was pretty well leaving. It was, you know, getting old.
Soon after that, the trail opens up to a picturesque view of Todd Inlet. Several boats are moored in the calm water.
So if you were going to tell somebody about the history of Todd Inlet, where would you start?
No idea. You know, a lot of it's still a mystery. And there is a book by John Gray that came out just recently, and he deals only with the history. And that would be, if someone's really interested, that's good, a good read. But I was interested in just going through the seasons, you know, doing a kind of homage to this place. And then segueing to off into little paths and going into native history, going into plants, mushrooms, whatever. And, of course, the cement plant, pre-Bouchard Gardens. And so my route was more creative and less just a history. But the bare bones are there in the book, so you can get a real sense of what happened anyway.
What do we know? What do you know about the history of how the Wasanich people used the area?
Well, this was their home, and massive amounts of food to be had. Lots of clams, and the Royal BC Museum has identified three major middens. These were, you know, thousands of years in the making, just people gathering and eating clams. This place was just so rich. I mean, it's quite dead now, unfortunately. It's still beautiful, but it doesn't have that richness. I mean, there were elk, you know, this is the place of the blue grouse. So, you know, they were just there for the taking. That was dinner, and you won't find any blue grouse here anymore. The fish, you know, the coho, the spring salmon, this, you know, the peninsula doesn't have a lot of water courses. We've got a few streams, no rivers. And this is a major stream. So it was a major place for the First Nations people. And they had ceremonies there for coming of age of the young men, and ceremonies before hunting and, you know, bathing in the creek, even in the winter, and gathering medicines here. This was just a gorgeous place to be. It had everything.
And when did, you know, when did other people, when did settlers start moving in?
Well, they didn't start moving in. The cement company moved them in, right? And there were no roads. So when they came here to be part of the cement plant, men working, bringing their families, they had to barge everything in. So they were isolated. You know, it wasn't like they could just go to Victoria. And they had to get all their goods and their food once a month. It was unique in the way that the Chinese people and the, we call them settlers, they're just Canadians, just like everybody else. But they did interact with one another. And the tensions between the Chinese coming in, needed for work, but taking the jobs supposedly of other people that already lived here. There were riots and various things. But here, that was very low-key. There was cooperation for the most part, even though there was still prejudice, you know, overt prejudice, but they managed to live together.
And we'll take a quick break here for a word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily podcast is brought to you by Esquimalt Town Center, a collection of 1 to 3 bedroom condos in beautiful Esquimalt. Come see why these move-in ready homes are already 80% sold, starting from $699,900. Visit aragon.ca/ETS for more info. That's aragon.ca/ETS.
Have you spoken with any of the descendants of the Chinese community that lived here?
No, that would be really hard to track down. It would be an interesting thing to do. John Gray has done some of that with the Indian people that worked here, the Hindu people. They were only here for, I think, 4 years, but they were a part of this whole thing. So there was 3 different groups of people at one point. And he has tracked down the families.
What do we know about how the Chinese community lived here, like what their lives were like? And they came presumably to work at the cement plant.
Yes, they did. I mean, they would have come to work at anything like the various railroads. There were still railroads being built on the mainland at that time. You know, the major railroad was already built. That was pretty gruesome. So they're looking for other jobs, and some landed here. And they were mostly from Guangzhou, a very large city in China. And, of course, all by themselves, you know, and no family. And they would raise pigs. And interestingly, unlike the Indians that worked here, Chinese people had Chinatown. You know, they could, you know, once in a blue moon, get into Victoria, and half the population of Victoria was Chinese way back then. So, you know, they had a community, but it was pretty basic out here. Yeah, they had to cook for themselves. They were totally apart, look after themselves. They would get sick with tuberculosis and diphtheria, and they'd get cold in the winter. They'd get pneumonia, you know, all those things.
Can you tell me a little bit about Portland Cement and what they were doing here, and just a bit of that backstory?
The original cement were called lime burners. And it was very basic, and the cement kind of gradually fell apart. And it wasn't till, and even Butchart had very more primitive cement companies back east in Ontario. But he gradually learned about the new method involving, you know, kilns heated to something like 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit and, you know, the right kind of clay, the right kind of everything. And it was a big production, and it took him like two or three companies to get it right, you know, like 10 years. So he was the consummate businessman, and he had, I think, seven cement plants in his lifetime. This was just one. His wife was really a big part of it. I mean, she was a really adventurous lady. She was also trained in chemistry, so she could help with making the Portland cement. And she was in the lab, making sure that the right amounts were going in, the right temperatures, etc. When everything shut down here, yeah, the quarries didn't have much more to give, and they moved over to Bamberton. She had a nice house. She liked gardening, but she was surrounded by basically a gravel pit. So what an amazing thing she did. I mean, she would go up these steep rock cliffs that you see in the sunken gardens, and she'd be in this chair, and somebody would be hauling her up, and she'd be planting things in the crevices of the rocks so that everything would cascade down. And I mean, she had the Chinese workers that were some left, of course, when it shut down, but she kept some as gardeners. So she had this army. She was, you know, a hard worker herself, but she had this army of Chinese men that became fantastic gardeners. And one was there for 50 years at the gardens and became a big part of the gardens.
You mentioned the sort of environmental degradation, and there's a lot of remediation going on right now. How do you know how the inlet was used and why? How did it get so wretched?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, not just one. This poor inlet, it's a wonder it's not just scum. In the days of the cement factory, they would have to scrape and repaint boats, and they were full of lead, right? The paint was lead, and the copper sulfate or whatever they used back then was nasty stuff. And all they did was drag the boats up to shore, scrape them off, let it all float away. And so the sediment at the bottom here is layers upon layers of this stuff. The Heartland dump was what we call it, the landfill now. It was leaching constantly over the years, even after, and especially after the cement plant, because of the population, I guess, explosion. We've got agriculture. We've got people, farmers, putting herbicides or pesticides or whatever on their crops, and that goes straight into the streams and the water system and ends up down here. You know, anything they needed to throw out, it went in the bay when the cement plant was here. So it went from this pristine place to an industrial wasteland. This estuary should all be eelgrass, as most estuaries are for nurseries, for all kinds of fish, crustaceans, you name it. Sea Change attempted to plant eelgrass, and apparently have done many acres and thousands of plants, but I'm not sure how successful it's been, because I think the actual base of the inlet is toxic. You know, you might have to dig the whole thing up. I'm not sure. Coupled with the fact that this is an inlet off a fjord, right? So this doesn't move around much. It doesn't flush. It just has a small tide. It goes in and out. It's very calm. And so it has no chance of doing it that way.
Your book is called Todd Inlet, A Healing Place. What's behind the title?
It was a healing place for me. I just love to be here, come down here, walk. It's a healing place for the First Nations people of the area. It wasn't just a pretty place. It was a special spiritual place. And then just all the other people that are that are down here. You know, it has an essence. It has a feel.
In recent years, there has been a big push towards ecological restoration of the area. For 8 years, the Snequith Resiliency Project was led by Sea Change Marine Conservation Society. It's now under the stewardship of a Wasanich nonprofit called the Papakin Hayout Foundation. Their focus is on education, restoration, and revitalization of traditional Wasanich ecosystems. If you've never been to Todd Inlet, well, now you know a little bit more. You should probably go check it out for yourself.
If you want to help support the Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, you can email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thank you for spending some of your day with us again today. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a rating and a review, and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamport. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.